Hello, everybody. I'm Liz Chambers. This month, we look closer at the increasingly radical and dangerous policies of the U.S. toward the Middle East, along with evidence of a growing class divide here at home. First, we turn to Iran. In a pattern eerily reminiscent of the buildup to the Iraq invasion, the White House appears to be planning an attack on Iran, perhaps even a nuclear engagement. But don't expect the Democrats in Congress to take a unified stand against military action.
Does the President of the United States have the authority to attack Iran?
No, not without congressional support. Authorization, I should say.
Is that a consensus in your body?
No. I don't think it's a consensus among Republicans or Democrats at this time. There's a consensus that we don't want Iran to be a nuclear power.
Writer Arthur Silber observes that the propaganda being used to sell the attack in Iran portrays the U.S. as victims rather than perpetrators.
Permanent blindness and thousands of victims, with the final tally 830,000 killed, another 875,000 injured. Monica, is there any possibility that the Iranian leaders that are in charge right now would ever be so irrational as to launch a nuclear attack on cities like Los Angeles, New York, Washington, D.C., if they get this nuclear device?
Unequivocally, yes, Joe. And in fact, the hypothetical scenario that you just laid out, that hypothetical ground zero is just a few blocks from where I'm sitting here tonight.
The only people likely to set off nuclear weapons in the United States in the near future, however, will be our own military.
If every single camera that's available in the media, cable-wide, network-wide, is not in Nevada at the nuclear test site on June 2nd to watch 1.4 million pounds of explosives be blown up so they can do the math and figure out how to make a tactical nuke, a smaller nuclear weapon that will represent that much firepower for Iran. If we don't show America this mushroom cloud that will explode in Nevada on the 2nd of June, there is no hope for the American people. There's no hope for the media. You asked me last time I was here, whose fault is it? And I said, it's our fault.
And make no mistake, if a nuclear attack on Iran does occur, the horrors will ripple out across the entire world.
The U.S. wants to develop a new type of nuclear weapon, a nuclear earth penetrator or bunker buster. This nuclear bomb, intended to destroy underground targets, would be useless against many bunkers. If the United States used a single weapon with a 1 megaton yield against the Isfahan nuclear facility in Iran, for example, the deadly radioactive fallout would spread to Pakistan, Afghanistan, and India. In this simulation, based on a model developed by the Pentagon, over 3 million people would be killed as a result of the attack, and 35 million people would be exposed to significant cancer-causing radiation.
So this is absurd in the extreme to talk about Iran suddenly representing a threat. We know Iran doesn't represent a threat. We know that Iran has no technical capability to enrich on the level that they've talked. They're still very much at the beginning stages of this process. And let me remind everybody that nothing Iran's accused of doing is illegal. They're permitted to do all of this under the Non-Proliferation Treaty.
Some of Washington's most devout believers in the neoconservative worldview have been enlisted to build up hysteria about Iran's intentions.
I think it has helped crystallize what kind of regime Iran really is.
The Iranian regime needs to know that if it stays on its present course, the international community is prepared to impose meaningful consequences.
Remember John Bolton, Bush's controversial nominee for ambassador to the United Nations? While Congress members were in recess last fall, President Bush defied them by appointing Bolton as interim UN ambassador. Bolton, who has deep roots in the controversial project for the new American century, is now living up to his reputation as an international bully. His rhetoric toward Iran consists of a series of boasts and threats.
The Iranian regime must be made aware that if it continues down the path of international isolation, there will be tangible and painful consequences. Rest assured, though, we are not relying on the Security Council as the only tool in our toolbox to address this problem.
Stay with us.
Thank you, Neil.
My neocon men friends got me to believe in the sunny optimism of preemptive war. I liked neocon men so much, I became one myself. Thank you, neocon men.
Even though most of us voted to authorize military force, your reckless ineptitude has given us a much better chance in the next election. Thank you, neocon men.
You've given this murderous tyrant more support than I ever dreamed. Somehow your poor bungling has made even me look good. Thank you, neocon men. Your war on the cheap invasion has made us sitting ducks waiting for the next IED to blow. Thank you, neocon man.
First, thousands of Iraqi civilians got killed by U.S. airstrikes. But now, we can also get killed by sectarian violence. Thank you, neocon man.
Thank you, neocon man.
3 years of Khan's combat and chaos have been made possible through the generous neocon actions of Rummy, Cheney, Wolfie, Condi, Richard Pearl, and other like-minded neocon men.
According to Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Seymour Hersh, U.S. troops have been inside Iran searching for weapons of mass destruction for more than a year.
The Iranians have been saying American military troops are in there, been saying it for almost a year.
Who's behind this push to try to force Iran to heal at the point of a nuclear missile?
With no active war by Iran, why would we commit an active war against them now? Who's pushing for this in the administration? The usual suspects, the hawks?
Interestingly enough, some in the administration will tell you that Dick Cheney is pushing hard for this.
Many fear that the Bush administration, facing a potential Democratic turnaround in the House, may lash out at Iran. They see Iran as a critical piece in their long-held fantasy of extending an American foothold into the oil-rich Middle East.
The United States of America is the most powerful nation on Earth. In itself, this goes a long way to explaining the things it does around the world. At present, it's conducting a war on terror, or more accurately, a campaign against opposition to US domination. Others prefer to call it the beginnings of the Third World War. The United States has an insatiable appetite for conflict. And since going into Korea in the 1950s, it's been at war with someone or other in some corner of the globe non-stop right up to the present day. This drive is now led by the weapons manufacturers themselves. It is a highly dangerous precedent. I call it war corporatism. It is the door of a new fascism being pushed open. And don't be fooled, not all fascism looks like Adolf Hitler. The reality, as we see from the Iraqi invasion, is that the presidency has been captured by the most powerful elements of this corporatism. And this ghastly molecule aims to turn the world into its very own enslaved global market. And the plan is well underway. The attack by Al-Qaeda on the World Trade Center is just one response to it. Is this a conspiracy? Quite the opposite. It is a high-profile project known as the Project for the New American Century. People like Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Richard Pearl are the major players among politicians, right-wing thinkers, militarists, and industrialists in the creation of the project. The project is a neoconservative manifesto, which includes in its toolbox the unbridled use of war in clearing a path for U.S. interests. The will to attack Iraq came entirely from this visible yet sinister group. September the 11th was merely the pretext. Bush is merely the figurehead. And so, who's next, you wonder? Iran? North Korea? France? Britain? None of us really matter to them.
Ordinary citizens have begun to challenge this runaway administration. As one man learned, however, any criticism of the White House will be met by a condescending critique by celebrity newscasters.
Talk about freedom. I see you assert your right to tap my telephone, to arrest me and hold me without charges, to try to preclude me from breathing clean air and drinking clean water and eating safe food. If I were a woman, you'd like to restrict my opportunity to make a choice. And
I'm not your favorite guy. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have never felt more ashamed of nor more frightened by my leadership in Washington, including the presidency, by the Senate and
no, let her say. Let her speak.
Yeah. And I would hope, I feel like, despite your rhetoric, that compassion and common sense have been left far behind during your administration. And I would hope from time to time that you have the humility and the grace to be ashamed of yourself, inside yourself.
I wanted to make a comment that maybe would get through to him and make him understand that there's hundreds of millions of people out here that don't particularly enjoy how he runs his country, our country.
Do you think, though, realistically, a guy standing in the balcony kind of getting an opportunity to speak his mind to the president is going to have any real impact?
You never know that, Phil Dodd. How do you know where those things come from? And probably not, but you never know that doesn't change something. Maybe you woke up at 3 o'clock this morning thinking, yeah, maybe that guy is right. Maybe I should think about who I'm leading in this world and not ignore everybody but Karl Rove and Dick Cheney and Dick Rumsfeld.
That might be a pretty big maybe. Let's talk about what the impact's been for you.
For Republican leaders in Washington, the past few weeks have conjured up the old parable about throwing stones when you live in a house of glass. Gone are the days when convicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff and disgraced House leader Tom DeLay rose to power by bashing imaginary conspiracies on the left.
The Washington Post, the New York Times, all of these liberal institutions take them over, and they become people who want to be popular and are willing to sell out their principles. Never before has an individual who has been steadfast to our principles risen as high as Tom DeLay. Tom DeLay is who all of us want to be when we grow up.
You're here.
I'm Ricky Dodd.
After many weeks of personal, prayerful thinking and analysis, I have come to the conclusion that it is time to close this public service chapter of my life.
But the damage to the GOP goes even deeper. Ralph Reed, the hero of the Christian right, has been exposed as a hypocrite. Another favorite of the so-called family values fringe, Rick Santorum of Pennsylvania, has also fallen from grace. New revelations about his secret financial dealings have discredited his messages about honesty and moral values. But it's not just mainstream Republicans who are disappointing the American people. Senator John McCain, often cited for his independence, is now cozying up to the Christian right.
Do you think that Jerry Falwell's ideas are now good for the Republican Party?
I believe that the Christian right has a major role to play in the Republican Party. One reason is because they're so active and their followers are.
Don't look to celebrity Democrats to demonstrate the genuine moral leadership that is lacking, not with an election on the horizon. Presidential hopefuls such as John Kerry, Hillary Clinton, and Joe Biden remain silent on withdrawal from Iraq, reject censure, scoff at impeachment, and seem asleep at the wheel with regard to an imminent attack on Iran. Here's what historian Howard Zinn said when asked if he would contribute money to Hillary Clinton's campaign.
I wrote back, I will contribute to Hillary Clinton when she comes out boldly against the war.
When we come back, we'll look at the growing gap between rich and poor in the United States and why you should care.
Glad President Bush lied about Saddam's weapons of mass destruction and his connections to Al-Qaeda. Otherwise, we'd have never seen Baghdad. Don't forget Bush's tax cuts that only benefit the rich.
Yeah. My wife.
Too.
She got laid off. We're gonna lose the house.
Here they come again!
Is America becoming a two-class nation? A new report on executive pay for CEOs highlights the growing gap between the wealthiest 10% of Americans, who control 71% of our assets, and everybody else. The Congressional Budget Office says the income gap in the United States is the widest it has been in 75 years. But it's not just CEOs who have benefited from 6 years of Bush tax cuts, which have left a gaping hole where the U.S. Treasury used to be. America's middle class is dwindling. In its place is a fraternity of the rich who are fortressing in their gated communities and luxury high-rise buildings.
My favorite thing is we have an 8-foot television screen that's hidden in front of the bed that was built in to the molding. This is our wine room, which is individually refrigerated and holds about 600, 700 bottles of wine. All the display bottles are on the bottom. Every bottle you see here has wine directly above it. And we found this chandelier, which is a one-of-a-kind antique, I think it's Baccarat or Lalique, with each individual piece signed.
We now face the repercussions of unregulated corporations and private wealth without responsibility, what economist John Kenneth Galbraith calls private wealth and public squalor.
Ken Galbraith understood something not only about the relationship between politics, economics, and morals, but also about the public sector and the private sector. That public investments in the environment, in public health, in public safety, are no less important, in fact, in many ways more important, than private investments in factories and equipment.
About 46 million Americans now lack basic health care. Last year, thanks to rising college costs and dwindling financial aid, 200,000 fewer high school students could afford to attend college. Republicans often spin any criticism of the income gap as an incitement to class warfare. In the 1950s, Martin Luther King was accused of stirring racial conflict in his fight for civil rights. But he found allies in unexpected places. It was Republican multimillionaire Nelson Rockefeller who secretly bailed King out of the Birmingham jail.
I'm in danger of being called a class warrior, but I'm going to say it anyway. If we do not expect people who are richer than ever to pay at least something toward the possibility that everybody else can get ahead and have a good life, we cannot have a coherent society.
That wraps up our news for this month. Kevin Quinn is next with a spooky tale about a media corporation that has run amok.
Attention filmmakers! Are you interested in making a B-movie thriller about a sinister media corporation? A company with close ties to a secretive, hardline government. How does military intrigue sound? What about a sexual scandal? A company that treats its employees like chattel. If you like this storyline, you may want to take a look at Sinclair Broadcast Group. Here's the pitch. A wealthy family in Maryland begins buying up local TV stations, forming a media conglomerate. They also invest in companies that make hardware used by U.S. military special forces in the name of anti-terrorism. They choose as their public face Mark Hyman, a former intelligence officer connected with the Center for Science-Based Public Policy in Annapolis, an organization underwritten by ExxonMobil. That think tank's important work? Denying that mercury in fish affects human health. Denying that pollution causes asthma. You get the idea. Hyman likes the feel of the lights on his face, so he begins dishing out a regular helping of right-wing diatribes, then ramming them down the throats of the company's 56 local TV affiliates.
No politician in America has a darker history with the waters off Martha's Vineyard than Senator Ted Kennedy. The Chappaquiddick kid has been leading a three-year-old battle to stop a windmill.
Sometimes these poorly written little rants are packaged as editorial. Other times, Sinclair forgets to label Hyman's section as commentary. So guess what? Viewers think they are watching news. Oops.
The stories have persisted for 3 months now. A small group of vocal critics have claimed the November presidential election was stolen. They point to Ohio and claim that thousands of reliable Democratic voters were disenfranchised.
To save money, Sinclair has been downsizing news divisions at many of its local affiliates and replacing local news with something called News Central content. That's a nice way of describing prepackaged infomercials and propaganda. They create these pieces in their Maryland studios, purposely making them look like part of your local news.
Certainly, political speech disguised as news content is not the way to serve the public good.
The election may have pushed one Hollywood type right over the edge. Ever since Bush won re-election, Vincent D'Onofrio, star of Law & Order: Criminal Intent, has been getting into fights and reportedly passed out on the set this week. D'Onofrio was a big Carrey supporter and was described as devastated by his loss. Crew members say he's pretty much lost all grip with reality since election night and is slowing the show's shooting schedule with his outbursts. On a lighter political note, we told you last week that the first family is getting a new member. Miss Beasley, the president's new puppy, will move in around Christmas and will look a lot like current first pup, Barney. She's named after a dinosaur in the children's book, The Enormous Egg. But the book's author was a staunch Democrat.
When the United States invaded Iraq, Sinclair really found its calling. Top brass at the company ordered local affiliates to make public statements supporting the illegal invasion. They also tried to swiftboat John Kerry with a one-sided documentary just days before the 2004 election. At the last minute, however, after a public outcry, they softened that programming. C'est la vie. Oh, sorry. Did I mention that Mark Hyman hates the French? He refers to them as cheese-eating surrender monkeys.
Lunch Lady Doris, why are you here?
Budget cuts. They've even got groundskeeper Willie teaching French.
Bonjour, you cheese-eating surrender monkeys!
In September 2004, Jadu Power Systems was awarded a large contract with the U.S. Military Special Forces Command. Why is this relevant? Because Sinclair owns a major share of Jadu. Is it any surprise that Sinclair's Mark Hyman wants to add to our out-of-control military budget? A few weeks ago, Hyman attacked Move On, the progressive fundraising group. I guess they must be getting to him.
America may love a loser, but enough is enough. MoveOn.org is the organization that comprises some of the foot soldiers in French convict George Soros' Army of Intolerance.
Americans love a loser? Are we talking about America as in the USA? I must have missed the Yankees ticker tape parade back in 2003 after they lost the World Series. Speaking of losers, Liberty News TV purchased a copy of a financial report analyzing Sinclair Broadcasting's money-making potential. Guess what Sinclair Broadcasting got on their report card? An F. That's right, F. The lowest possible score. Imagine if your kid came home from school with a big F on his report card. Would you take away a few privileges, perhaps? Or reward his low scores? Maybe it's just a coincidence, but the value of Sinclair's stock declined dramatically after 2003, the same period that Mark Hyman has been editorializing so aggressively.
If you work for Sinclair, chances are you already know that you would be better off having a union representation. They are, in my opinion, a very arrogant, belligerent employer. They do not really care about people. And I know that, speaking for myself and most of our members, I would not want to work for a Sinclair station that did not have a union.
Where does Sinclair's talking head stand on the issues? He's only too happy to tell you. First, it's the victim's fault.
Three major cable news channels continue to sensationalize a handful of missing persons or mystery murder cases. The details are nearly always the same. The victim is young, female, attractive, and white. The coverage of these stories often ignores a very important element, personal responsibility. By exercising sound judgment, most of these victims could have avoided their tragic endings.
Also, Hyman says the groups that defend our civil liberties are anti-American.
The American Criminal Liberties Union fancies itself as the protector of individual rights. The reality is, the ACLU is a bunch of ambulance chasers with an extremist agenda.
Mark Hyman may be a nice guy in person. You see, I'm not one of those members of the angry left he likes to rail about. In fact, sometimes I just want to reach out and pinch his handsome cheeks. Let's face it. Mark Hyman and his right-wing pals who run Sinclair have created a profitable propaganda machine for the far-right interests of corporations. The Center for Public Integrity found that 95% of Sinclair's large campaign contributions since 1998 have gone to corporate-friendly Republicans.
We've heard people don't want to come to work here because they've heard about the notorious reputation of Sinclair Broadcast Group.
And as far as that sex scandal I mentioned, it's not relevant to this story or to Mark Hyman directly. So out of respect for the family of the Sinclair leader involved, we won't rehash it here. Sinclair Broadcasting depends on local advertising for its survival. That means the company can be held accountable. This is where you come in. On our website at libertynewstv.com, you'll find a link listing all of Sinclair's local television affiliates. You probably have one in your backyard. Get up off the couch right now and log on. Find out which local advertisers support your Sinclair affiliate. Let them know you will boycott their business until Sinclair starts offering equal time for opposing viewpoints to Mark Hyman's tirade, labels its commentaries clearly, and takes care of its workers. Keep in mind that the local employees of Sinclair are not the problem. Many of them are fine and dedicated journalists who want to do their jobs.
I mean, I would like to see our effort here not just help the 50 people in our unit, but help people at other Sinclair stations know that they do have a choice. They can organize and speak out against bad treatment by Sinclair. These people behind me get it. Our workers and the people from other unions in the greater Portland, Maine area, they understand the importance of this fight.
I'll tell you a secret. This expensive microphone I'm wearing was donated to Liberty News TV by a Sinclair employee. Thanks, Sinclair, for underwriting this editorial and supporting our freedom of speech. After all, isn't that the point? Liberty News TV depends on the support of viewers like you, not corporations. Visit our website at libertynewstv.com and let us know you care. We are bound to guard our borders, sacrifice our soldiers. What kind of world is this, where hatred can persist?